When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Today's Real Vision Daily Briefing is brought to you by Chintai, your partner in asset tokenization. Licensed and regulated by Singapore's Monetary Authority and powered by the innovative CHEX token, Chintai offers a compliant, one-stop solution for bringing real-world assets on-chain. Chintai enables the tokenization of virtually any asset, from carbon credits to corporate debt, private funds, and real estate, enhancing liquidity and optimizing efficiency for all.
The technology becomes largely invisible and seamless to the end user. I can take a selective store of value within a wider portfolio in a fairly liquid form, very efficiently, to anything, whether it's some high-value whiskey, whether it's a particular supercar that's a one of three limited edition, therefore in this fungible trading of them in a liquid form, is the true end game here for tokenization.
With billions of dollars in client deals facilitated, explore how you can take advantage of tokenization by visiting realvision.com/chintai. Should you steer clear of autos? Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Real Vision Daily Briefing. I'm Maggie Lake. With me today is Kevin Muir, author of the Macro Tourist Newsletter. Hey there, Kevin. Great to have you here today.
Well, thanks for having me on. I've been looking forward to this.
That is just the best name for any newsletter. I absolutely love it. And before we jump into specifics, talk about what you're seeing on the macro, the broad macro spectrum. What are you in a camp? You know, what is the sort of framework that you're operating from?
Well, I guess if you had to put me in the camp, I've been in the economy is going to be stronger than everyone expects camp. And ultimately, it comes down to my belief that from 1982 all the way to COVID, we, in essence, tried to influence the economy solely through monetary means. And then when COVID came, we all of a sudden introduced fiscal stimulus. And fiscal stimulus ends up being way stronger than people expect. I think that's part of the reason that everyone's continually been surprised that the economy hasn't rolled over is because they underestimate the power of fiscal. And I continue to believe that as long as we have fiscal stimulus, as long as we have things like the IRA, as long as we have two presidents that are talking about how much they're going to spend instead of trying to balance the budget, I think we're going to have an economy that ends up being stronger. So count me in the inflation and the economy is going to be stronger camp.
Yeah, it's so interesting because that was really, so many people got that wrong, I think, and have been surprised at the strength. And even if they were wrong initially, they thought, okay, well, the timing's just off, but we keep pushing it out and pushing it out. Right. I want to, at the very top, run a clip from Josh Young, who just came on and talked to Damian Horner, one of our co-founders, for a show we do called Three Ideas. And he talks about his three favorite trades at the moment, but he also was talking about he's coming from a very similar place as you are, I think, in terms of looking at the strength of this economy. Let's listen to a clip of that.
I think we're in very complicated and challenging times. I think we'd be in a deep recession if there wasn't such extreme fiscal stimulus and deficit spending going on in the US as well as in various other countries around the world. I think there's a lot of complexity and concern around what's happening in China. And I think we might actually be seeing a little bit of a slowdown right now in India, despite some of the rosy economic figures that people are looking at and rosy projections. And so I think we're in sort of challenging times. That being said, I think it's really important to remember that in the long run, stocks do very well. So it makes sense, I think, to try to not, you know, to try to be like Peter Lynch and not get out of the market out of a concern of a recession.
And you can see his three ideas, Josh's three ideas on the platform that show's dropped. Just head over if you are on YouTube and you are not a member, subscribe so that you can get it. And that's the show we track what they say and see who is performing the best. Some really good ideas in there too. So, you know, I think what's so interesting about that, Kevin, is that
he's talking about this, these extraordinary forces, but also saying it's not that easy, right? It's been a little bit complex. It's not like, yes, there's fiscal spending, we're off to the races, and you know, everyone jumps on that narrative. Some of you have been contrarian on that for a while because we've seen weakness here or there. And today's ISM numbers are a perfect example, right? They came in a little bit weaker. So then people were thinking, oh, okay, maybe the Fed's back on the table. You saw that in stocks. Interestingly, Treasury yields did dip, but then they kind of came back up again. So maybe not buying that right away. But you can find a piece of data to support whatever your view is. And it's made it tough for people.
Oh, for sure. And one of the things that you can also see is that the divergence between soft and hard data, soft meaning things that like our surveys, people's expectations, that's continually being, you know, much weaker than everyone expected. And yet the hard data has continued to like be firm and actually surprise to the upside. Same with inflation. And one of the things I remember Mike Wilson, that legendary strategist, saying that the hard data always follows the soft. And that's part of the reason that he was so bearish and, you know, expecting the market to come in. And yet this time it hasn't. And I think that one of the mistakes that a lot of people are making is they keep assuming that this cycle is like the last cycles of the past 40, 50 years. And I really contend that given the fact that fiscal is now the dominant force, it is affecting the economy. And I might even argue that the Federal Reserve is not able to control the economy as much as they think they can with interest rates, and that rises don't have the kind of typical effect that they do, that really they're not able to steer the ship as much as they think they are. And that really we should be watching for fiscal instead of monetary.
Yeah, and this is a big change, right? It was all about monetary before, but now you have Congress that's spending. And spending. Yep. I mean, there's a spending bill in front of Congress right now that they've extended their session. And it looks like, you know, the big headlines have been aid. But I heard someone talking about it today. When you dig in there, a lot of it's defense spending that's going to be domestic.
Right.
It will result in aid and arms going abroad, but it is domestic. So it will stimulate the U.S. economy. That was their pitch to try to get senators to pass it, but put on the conversation we're having, it's yet more stimulus after we've already seen a lot of stimulus.
And the other problem, Maggie, is that we have things like the IRA, Inflation Reduction Act, which is just an oxymoron. It's anything but inflation reducing. But it's difficult to judge how much has actually gone out into the economy. Mm-hmm. You see those things where they talk about, oh, the fiscal stimulus, it's getting whittled down. This is the month that it's finally going to kick in and that this is that we're going to have the fiscal stimulus will be gone. The trouble is when you look at the IRA, it's actually money that's been allocated to states. And you know how difficult it is to actually for the government to spend money, all the bureaucracy, the red tape. So when you think about it, we actually could have tons of money sitting at the state level that still has not gone out. Mm. And this is the problem with fiscal stimulus. It is very hard to track and to get a feel for how much is actually still waiting to be spent.
Yeah, which, you know, we often talk about this because we talk about inflation as being so bad. And John is asking, what's the outlook for U.S. inflation in the next 12 months? That sort of stimulus that takes a long time to go through the pipe that's uneven could potentially just provide a floor for growth. But the problem is we've had so much of it. So we don't know. We don't know how to calibrate that. And then we've been getting these nasty surprises. By the way, I'm assuming neither does the Fed, right? Because you can't game out when your local neighborhood. I mean, I'm getting all new sidewalks. That was probably from 5 years ago. Who
exactly.
knows what
You're
that's
absolutely
a part
right.
of. And it's needed. Improving infrastructure is needed. Anybody who saw the Baltimore Bridge disaster knows that. But in terms of economic modeling, it's tricky.
100%. And the reality is that you can just look at it and say, I expect the surprises to be to the upside. I don't know the specific timings. I can't tell you if this is the one, if we're going to, you know, come in. But over time, when you look at this, you can say, given the fiscal spending, given the continued fiscal spending, we're going to see more and more surprises to the upside in terms of inflation.
Hey, everyone. We're going to take a quick break right now to hear a word from our partners. We'll be right back with more of the day's top analysis on the Real Vision Daily Briefing.
Today's Real Vision Daily Briefing is brought to you by Chintai, your partner in asset tokenization. Licensed and regulated by Singapore's Monetary Authority and powered by the innovative CHEX token, Chintai offers a compliant, one-stop solution for bringing real-world assets on-chain. Chintai enables the tokenization of virtually any asset, from carbon credits to corporate debt, private funds, and real estate, enhancing liquidity and optimizing efficiency for all.
The technology becomes largely invisible and seamless to the end user. I can take a selective store of value within a wider portfolio in a fairly liquid form, very efficiently, to anything, whether it's some high-value whiskey, whether it's a particular supercar that's a one of three limited edition, therefore, and this fungible trading of them in a liquid form is the true end game here for tokenization.
With billions of dollars in client deals facilitated, explore how you can take advantage of tokenization by visiting realvision.com/chintai.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
510 is declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
Yeah, so that's a good answer, John, because it's more nuanced. It's not like, oh, inflation is going to, you know, be at XX percent. It's not going to be a straight line, maybe, but it's just the trend is higher. Also means the trend's higher than the Fed's potentially comfortable with, right, Kevin?
And I think even more important than the trend is the direction of the surprises. If you can figure out the direction of the surprises, you've gone a long way in terms of figuring out how to, you know, position your portfolio.
So Nick is asking, can you comment? I'm going to go with questions right away. You guys are on it. They're good. Can you comment on the VIX and TLT? We just saw a massive drop in the VIX today. And yet when the VIX spiked last week, TLT didn't really respond the way flight to safety trade normally does.
Okay. That's a great point. Over the last 40, 50 years, we had this negative correlation between stocks and bonds. It ended up being gave rise to one of the richest hedge fund managers in the world, Ray Dalio, risk parity. And it was a great way to construct a portfolio in terms of you'd buy the risky asset, you would lever up the risk-free asset. And then when things went wrong with the risky asset, often the risk-free asset would go up in price. So therefore the volatility of your portfolio would be lower. It's been terrific. I've been arguing for a while to be careful about bonds, and this is even, you know, basically pre-COVID, I've been saying this, that bonds might eventually, instead of being the ballast to your portfolio, could eventually be the anchor that drags it down. And that's exactly what we saw in 2021 and 2022, in that bonds, because of this inflation, because of this bad return, actually dragged it down. And so the negative correlation between stocks and bonds actually flipped and it became a positive correlation. They went together.
Yeah.
So one of the things I think is actually one of the largest challenges to, you know, regular investors out there, not just regular investors, actually pension funds, endowments, is this disappearance of the negative correlation between stocks and bonds.
Yeah.
No longer can you do that. And if you think about it through, you go through the logic, one of the kind of consequences of that is means you actually have to use less leverage, because now you can no longer count on that risk-free asset providing a buffer. And in fact, it might drag your portfolio down. So when the readers or listeners asking the question about VIX and TLT, I've long given up on TLT as being a buffer for my portfolio and expect that to save it if we get into a situation where it's risk off. The thing I'm most worried about is bonds continuing to sell off and it dragging the stock market down. Like when I think about the risk going forward, if the economy rolls over and inflation comes in, actually, to me, that's not a bad outcome. What's going to happen is the Fed's going to lower rates. Everything's going to get a bid. It's actually going to be okay. What's more worrisome, what's more scary, and what's more difficult to actually construct a portfolio for is, what if inflation continues to surprise to the upside? What if the stock or the economy keeps being stronger than everyone expects? And then that ends up being a much more difficult situation.
Yeah, absolutely. And we've seen that, right? We've seen that everyone, Somebody commented, everyone's got to be a rate, got to have their eye on rates, right? I mean, there is a time when people just looked at equity, especially if you're, you know, looking at home, you're worried about your 401. You have to know what's happening with rates now, because it has been the rug that's been pulled out a few times now and caused a big downtrend for stocks. I want to put a pin in that. Somebody remind me if I don't come back to it, because I want to ask you what you do like in terms of portfolio construction to help. But I want to ask you one more thing about this idea of bonds and the impact on the economy. You know, when people have been thinking about what's happening, is it weak? Is it strong? I think the other thing that's thrown people is that we see pullbacks in certain areas. And I would say amongst certain people, we know inflation has hit people hard at the lower end. We just don't know if anyone noticed in the US, depending on where you are, but gas just spiked, gasoline prices. We know that acts as an immediate tax, especially for folks you know, on the lower to mid range of the economy. And yet you have the people who own assets have done really well. How are you thinking about that and the way that the bond market plays into it? Because if you borrow money, you've been hurt by bonds. But if you don't, then it doesn't seem like it has had the impact that the Fed maybe would have hoped by slowing things down.
You're absolutely right. And it is a very difficult thing for the Fed to actually stick handle through. And it ultimately comes down to the idea that, you know, there's two ways to create money. One is a bank lends it into existence. That's where you and I go to the bank. We borrow to buy a car, to buy a house. We lend that into existence. The other way that you can create money and actually is through the government spending it into existence, meaning you do deficit spending. And what's happened recently is that as the Federal Reserve has raised rates, it has affected the economy. The private sector has lent less, so there's no doubt about it. But it's not affecting the economy as much as everyone hoped, or at least as much as the Federal Reserve hoped. And the reason it's not doing that is because a lot of people went in and got mortgages and locked it in. You guys in America have 30-year mortgages, one of the most wonderful things around, because now all of a sudden everyone locked in their mortgages. And so when the Fed raised rates, the economy wasn't as sensitive to it. But on the other side, Maggie, what's occurred is that as the Fed's raised rates, it's increased the cost of the existing debt of the Fed, of the Treasury, meaning the government. And when they increase that, what you need to remember is that the government's deficit is the private sector's credit. Everyone always thinks the government's, you know, spends, the money's gone. It's not really gone. It's actually somebody's credit. And that's part of the reason the U.S. economy has done so well, because they've run, you know, you guys ran 24% debt deficits to GDP post-COVID. The next closest economy was Australia at 18. We ran 16. So that's part of the reason it's done, your economy's done so well. And so what's happened is as rates have gone up, it has actually increased the deficit. So right now you're running 5 to 6% deficit, even though you have unemployment at 3.5%. Mm. And as that deficit has gone up, we just said that the government's deficit is the private sector's credit. So to your point that, yes, the rich people are becoming richer because they're the ones that own those bonds, and they're that the private sector is earning it. So the it savers. Is a quandary. And one of the conclusions you might say is that the Federal Reserve can't affect economy as much as they think they can affect it. And ultimately, with trying to deal with this problem in inflation, either we should be taxing less, more, or spending less. And that is the true way that you can actually slow down the economy.
Which will be so popular to talk about in Washington during an election year.
Right. And that's ultimately why I'm a big inflation bull, because I don't think it's going to happen. Even absent an election year, I don't think it's occurring. Yeah. I think that we as a society, and it's not just you guys, it's everyone all the world over. It used to be people would go and run and be worried about when they were running for office, they would be worried and talking about how they were going to balance budgets. You don't hear anything about that anymore.
No, it's, and this is a huge shift. And many of you folks who are really smart and watching this and really thinking about the future are talking about this and the perils of this. We have a question from Doug about gold, because anytime we go down this road, we're going to talk about gold. But first, I do want to ask you about autos. We came in on that. And Tesla is out with earnings after the bell. I'm just going to read you guys some of the headlines in case you're driving or something and you're not behind. 45 cents versus 51 cents expectations. Revenue 21 versus 22.15. Revenue dropped 9% from a year earlier. I mean, I think a lot of us knew this. If you look at the stock, it's off 40 3%. So I think investors have been pricing this in. It's a little bit of a train wreck. Tesla's got a lot of stuff going on. But overall, you posted something recently. Now, GM was one of the winners today. It came out with earnings that beat expectations.
Yeah.
But you don't like autos. You posted, right? Are we correct in saying this? Sell your autos. Seriously,
take them off your screen. Yeah, 100%.
What is going on with you and autos? Why are you so bearish?
It's already a difficult industry that suffers from overcapacity. And then what happened was that we went down this road of trying to move our, you know, existing fleet into electrical vehicles. And so governments the world over encouraged all sorts of more supply. And although you might say that most people, you know, either want an electric or they want a traditional one, an ICE car, the reality is a car is a car is a car. And we now all of a sudden have way more supply than we've ever had. You go back and you look at China, they have 91 separate electric vehicle makers. It's monstrous. Like the amount of extra supply that we've created has been absolutely huge. And so my point is, this industry was already a bad industry. It reminded me of the airline industry. Warren Buffett has this famous line. He says, if we really wanted to do something positive for capitalism, we'd go back and sabotage the Wright brothers and when they took off, because the airlines have been such a complete waste of investors' capital over the years. I suspect it's going to be the absolute same when it comes to autos. This is going to be a race to the bottom. Yes, you might have squiggles that, you know, for a month or two, it goes up. But at the end of the day, there's just way too much capacity. And it's one of the things you just don't overthink it. There's extra capacity. It reminds me a lot of the cannabis craze that we had here in Canada when we all of a sudden legalized cannabis and all these stocks went to the moon and there was dispensaries everywhere. Absolutely. The supply response was huge. And nobody made money. And I suspect that it'll be the same with autos. Over the long run, these companies are going to struggle and it's going to be something.
But they're almost utilities because cars are needed.
Well, utilities make money. I think these things won't make money. There's just too much capacity and we need to go through a period where they go out of business. And the other thing is you can't get consolidation like you can in a traditional industry. Like BMW is not going to buy Toyota or Toyota is not going to buy BMW, whatever it is. You don't get that sort of thing. And then not only that, you have this China pushing in terms of the extra supply. They've gone from being like exporting zero cars and importing cars to being one of the largest car exporters in the world. And they not only that, also they're doing it and they've created their own new price segment. They're competing like BYD sells these $10,000 cars that my buddy Louis Gav talks about. He says to the emerging markets, and now all of a sudden emerging market people, citizens can actually afford these cars. Mm. And going back to our inflation issue, if we do have a situation where you have a lot more cars being built for a lot less, that also means that the commodity prices are going to go up.
We're going to take another quick break to hear a word from our partners. We'll be right back with more of the day's top analysis on the Real Vision Daily Briefing.
It's really interesting, something that we really need to think about because, you know, we all know that we're on a cycle, we're going to continue to buy this, but the idea that they're not even profitable and are getting, you know, we've got this whole new level of competition. And then some of these sort of legacy things that prevent innovation, I guess, and a way for the industry to sort itself out. I'd add on to, you know, these big companies that have these sort of national identities. Not likely to merge or get an international cross-border merger. We also in the U.S. are kind of moving the other way. We just had a union vote succeed in Tennessee. You know, we had that sort of segmented whole part of the South, Southeast that was not unionized car makers. And now will it ripple? We don't know, but that adds another dynamic to watch out for. Christopher's saying that although the numbers were bad for Tesla, they weren't as bad as maybe some were bracing for. So that whisper number, maybe.
For sure.
There's a little bit.
It's the worst performing stock in the S&P 500.
That's a really big loss. Okay. So let's get to the idea. Cause a couple of people have a question on this, including, as I mentioned, Doug, talk about gold am I right in thinking if you do not find that bonds give you that uncorrelated protection or hedge, is it commodities? Is that the answer that you found?
Well, long-term, I actually think that inflation breakevens are the most attractive asset to own, but that's a complicated discussion. And what for the folks that are interested, inflation breakevens are you buy tips And tips are a bond plus inflation protection. And you hedge out the bond portion because I suspect the bonds will do bad. So it's isolating only the inflation portion only. And, you know, that's my favorite long-term play. But let's talk about gold, because gold is another way to do it. But I actually am bullish gold and have been bullish gold for a completely different reason. And I don't even think you need to have to be worried about inflation to be bullish gold. And one of the things that's been most surprising over the past year or two has been the fact that gold has risen as interest rates have also risen. And traditionally, it's been the opposite. Usually, it takes lower interest rates, especially real interest rates, to have a, you know, a gold bull market. And if you go back and you look at the correlation between, let's say, gold and the 10-year tip yield, you'll see in, on an inverse basis, you'll see that it was almost one for one. And then all of a sudden, it split. And that split came down to when Putin invaded Ukraine. And when he did that, and then ultimately the West chose to go and to confiscate their reserves, the Russian central bank's reserves, it changed the whole game for gold. What it did was, if you were another central bank and all of a sudden you were looking at your reserves, whereas previously you had owned US dollars or German bunds, and you had said, these are safe, this is a great investment, you said, hey, wait, they can actually zero these on me. And it all of a sudden made gold that much more attractive. Now, the reality is that the People's Bank of China owns so many FX reserves, they cannot buy enough gold to switch it. So instead of just going out and saying, okay, I'm going to switch it all into gold, they just said, I'm going to go and I'm going to be continually on the bid for gold. And when you go look at the gold, the central bank buying over the past couple of years, it's gone up. It's steadily gone up. And I think the reason to own gold is because that trend of the central banks buying it is not going away. It has fundamentally changed it. And I've been saying this for a while. Everyone's been focusing on the US dollar. They've been focusing on interest rates. And although I do think that that affects it at the margin, that's the financial portion of it. There is a bigger geopolitical asset allocation choice by central banks that is truly driving the price of gold over the long run. And that is all that matters.
Mm. What about, so do you feel the same way about miners? I know I'm going to get that question. Or like the gold commodity itself?
So that's a great question. So the miners, they've been terrible until the last couple of months. And so why have they been terrible? Well, one reason they've been terrible is because as gold has increased, their costs have increased at the same rate. Like there's been no margin expansion in terms of their gold goes up by 10, 20% and their costs go up by 10 or 20%. So that's part of the reason that they're hated. But the other reason that they're hated is because let's go back to who was buying gold. It was central banks. The People's Bank of China is not going to come and buy, you know, Barrick or Newmont or the GDX. So the reality is that most of the last, you know, year or so, most of the West has been extremely bearish gold. Yes, it's changed over the last month or so with the geopolitical angst. But on the whole, they've been selling. All you have to do is look at the GLD ETF holdings, and they've been going straight down. And so part of the reason the gold miners have done so poorly is because the reality is that we as Westerners have been selling and shedding gold assets, and the overseas, the Asian countries have been buying it. Now, having said that, I am bullish on miners because I think that with the recent increase in the gold price, they're going to have margins expand because even they can't increase their costs fast enough to not make more money on this. And what I've found over the years, I've kind of coined this term that I like, that it's a series of rolling mini bubbles. And over my years in the markets, I've kind of been through a lot of bubbles, and people say this is a bubble, that's a bubble. And although I think we haven't had any truly massive bubbles, we have lots of little ones. Mm. And it's the nature of our market has changed. And what happens is a good idea happens, you get this initial run, and then it kind of goes a little bit and it starts to do better, and then it keeps going. And it's always a mistake to sell too early. So I think that all you have to do is look at AI last year. I remember Stanley Druckenmiller coming out and saying, I bought this NVIDIA. To me, it felt like it had run already a long way. And I thought to myself, that's crazy. It's already like a long way up. And it proceeded to double from there. Mm-hmm. And I think that's just the reality of these new markets where there's a lot of momentum chasing. And the fact is that gold is a very small market, and the gold miners, as they do better from a price perspective, and then even more importantly, as they start to do better from an earnings perspective, will continue to do well. And eventually, I think they will be chased and they will be a great market and a great bull market in gold miners.
Yeah, it's so interesting because we do get that question when you see that pop, like, should I take my profit? Should I, you know, the idea of trying to stay with it and let it run is a hard one for people to get their head around. What about Bitcoin or any crypto? Is that at all in the I didn't get a chance to find out in your macro framework with you, whether you were a lover or a hater.
I am a hater, and I've been wrong. So you shouldn't listen to me. And I'll tell you this. The moment I turn bullish on Bitcoin, you guys should sell it all. So you should, all the bulls out there should be happy that I continue to be a skeptic.
What about, because we're almost out of time, but I wanted to ask you, you're a Japan bull.
I'm a huge Japan bull. So if we stop and think about what's occurring there, they're running their economy hot. They're keeping their interest rates low. Yes, they're slowly moving off, but on the whole, you know, all the rest of the world has raised rates. Europe raised rates, you know, Canada raised rate, US raised rate. Japan said, no, we're not going to raise rates. And in doing so, what's happened is their currency has really gotten clubbed. Like, it's so, so cheap. And
1990 levels, I think,
yeah,
right?
It's absolutely nuts. I'll tell you a quick story, Maggie. I took my kids, my family and my kids to Japan, and my youngest was there, and we were in this kind of pseudo fancy restaurant in Tokyo, and he started ordering some stuff, and he ordered some Wagyu steak, and I'm thinking to myself, oh God, this is going to be a lot of money. Bill comes, it's $1,900. I go, oh, you know what? I shouldn't have let him order the steak. And then I realized it's $190 because I got the math wrong because there's so many zeros. Wow. It is so cheap. You look on a purchasing power parity basis, it is the cheapest currency out there. Not only that, from an economic point of view, they're making all these reforms in terms of their stock market. Now, in the past, you could just, you know, be a poor performing stock. If you're trading below book, you're getting threatened to get delisted. It's working well for them. They're stealing growth from the rest of the world with their low currency. I think it's a terrific buy. I think that the stock market is going to continue to be one of the best performing stocks. I've been loving it for a while. Warren Buffett got in there. I've basically been tagging along with him from that moment. I'm trying hard to just stay with it because it's super cheap. And I think that you can buy it now because the currency, even if the stock market doesn't go up, I think you're going to get a bump on the currency because I think that has to get revalued higher.
Yeah. Somebody was joking about like, now's the time you book your trip. And it's so true.
Oh, yes.
Do you just do a broad ETF or how is there anything specific that you like in terms of sector, or are you just kind of...
I just do the broad. I end up trading a lot of futures. So for me, I end up being long, you know, the future. And then I have to actually own the currency too. I do think that, by the way, if we're going to talk briefly about the currency, I think that we're now at a stage where they're going to intervene. Mm-hmm. I suspect that we have hit a point where it's going to surprise everyone. And they're going to say, oh no, this is it. 155 is the level and we'll be below 150. And the other thing is that, you know, I hate to talk about politics, but if you go look at Trump and you look at what is like his policy, he's already talking about devaluing the dollar. Lighthizer, one of his advisors, is already floating it out there. I think that increasingly the cheap Japanese yen is a problem for the global financial system. They're not wrong when they say that needs to be revalued. Mm-hmm. And I suspect that their days of being able to steal growth from everyone else is gone, and that we're going to have to head higher in the coming months and years.
Yeah. Monday, just yesterday, our guest was also talking about, actually it was last week. I think it was Greg Weldon, not Dale, was talking about, Plaza Corps days, you know, that the idea that yes, not only could maybe the US be in on the action, but it'd be coordinated because some of these currencies are now getting so stretched, that it is problematic for the financial system that wasn't built on those kinds of, so it's going to be really interesting to watch. Kevin, this was such a fun conversation. We covered a lot of ground. Somebody asked about your deep thoughts about why you're a skeptic of crypto. We don't have time to get into that right now, Paul. You should know that. But we will happily have Kevin back on because although some areas of our community are really into it, we're always airing diverse opinions and really having a robust conversation around it so everyone can understand. So we'll have you back for that fun
Sounds
another
good.
Time, Kevin.
Okay.
It's great stuff. By the way, we were just talking about the currencies and what's happening. I think I mentioned this to you all, but Dan, my Life in Four Trades that I taped with Dan Tapiero is hitting the platform tomorrow. Oh my gosh, he has some stories. And we talked about some of these epic trades that he was involved with back in the day when the ERM was getting busted, when there was the Asian currency crisis. So it's a really fascinating behind the scenes look from somebody who had a front row to a lot of huge events in financial markets and has a lot of experience and is a fantastic guy. So be sure to check that out. Kevin, I hope you'll come back again soon.
I had a terrific time. Thanks for having me. And anytime.
Good. Great stuff. Thanks, everybody. Great, great questions. We'll see you same time tomorrow. Take care and good luck out there, everybody.
We hope you enjoyed this episode. At Real Vision, we arm you with the expert knowledge, time-efficient tools, and a powerful network to help you succeed on your financial journey. Get a taste of financial freedom with our free offer at realvision.com/free.